We'll hear from Murat Yıldız, who is a doctoral candidate in the Department of History here at UCLA. Next year, Murat will be moving to the University of Michigan at Ann Arbor, where he will hold the Manoogian Postdoctoral Fellowship, whereafter he will go to Skidmore College, where he will become an assistant professor of history. Murat.
Richard, thank you for the introduction. Sabu, thank you for organizing this conference. Thank you to Mary and Sona for all their hard work and all of you for coming today. Before I begin, I'm going to try to actually microphone check 1, 2. I'll let you hear me in the back. Okay, so I'm trying to plug in this little device, which will enable me to point at the very titillating images that you're going to see in a second. During the early 20th century, Ottoman Muslim, Christian, and Jewish citizens in Istanbul started to discuss the relationship between exercise, the body, and community. Oh, that is for you not to see yet. In 1912, for example, Selim Sırrı and Şahbaz Krisyan each wrote articles in which they encouraged people to play sports and join an athletic club, and stressed that the regular performance of physical training is, quote, necessary for the life of the nation. Each article was written in a separate language, published in a different sports magazine, and focused on a distinct ethno-religious community. For example, Sırrı talked about Turks, and Krisyan about Armenians. However, the underlying assumptions of the article were identical. Communities, nations, and the Ottoman Empire were biological organisms that lived and died, and their performance of physical exercise was necessary for their survival. Together, the writings of Sırrı and Krisyan are constitutive of a shared physical culture that Ottomans worked out in schools, on the soccer field, at the sports club, and in the pages of Istanbul's multilingual press. So this culture centered around the belief that gymnastics, free movement calisthenics, and team sports, such as soccer and field hockey, were civic activities and the most effective means to forming robust young men, modern communities, and a civilized empire. So the spread of sports and physical activities throughout the empire, now back to the photo, or the caricature, was part of a global transformation during the 19th century. Educators, religious leaders, government officials, doctors, and intellectuals in urban centers of the United States, Europe, and China grew increasingly concerned with the theme of robustness and regeneration, creating beneficial leisure activities and encouraging people to regularly train and discipline their bodies. What was unique about the Ottoman context was the way in which sports were underpinned by both civic and exclusive ethno-religious ties. So my presentation today will focus on two sites in which Turks and Armenians developed the defining contours of this culture in early 20th century Istanbul. So while there are important individual dynamics in each site, for the purposes of my talk today, I'll talk about commonalities. So I should say what this paper is not. This paper is not a pre-genocide narrative of harmonious relations between Turks and Armenians. So rather, it's an attempt to reflect on how these institutional arenas and discursive transformations offer the following insights into late Ottoman society. First, how they serve as unique vantage points from which to reflect on how novel activities, practices, and ideas were the collective effort of Turks and Armenians, as well as other Ottomans before the genocide. Second, how they reveal the overlap of civic and exclusive ethno-religious bonds. And third, how they offer a textured and multidimensional understanding of the making of modernity in the empire by revealing the intersection of reformist debates, discussions, subject formation, gender, and fun. And so fun is obviously not off limits to us historians. We can also see their interconnection with other activities. It was a bit of a joke. It wasn't very fun, but I'll try the pitch next time differently. So the first of the two overlapping spheres that I will be discussing is the sports club.
The sports clubs were the main spaces in which Turkish, Armenian, as well as Jewish and Greek young men met to exercise, play sports, and socialize in late Ottoman Istanbul. They were part of a growing trend of voluntary associations throughout the empire, which included educational, philanthropic, scientific, political, and literary clubs. Sports clubs were predominantly, although not exclusively, spaces of male sociability, and represented crucial sites where historically novel male subjectivities were formed, negotiated, and performed. Young men learned how to talk, to dress, and to socialize through and in between exercising, competing, or playing, or on other occasions, listening to lectures, reading, and attending social functions. So these civic spaces attracted young men from similar backgrounds. They attracted young men from similar backgrounds by offering them a private space where they could spend their leisure time training their bodies, performing sports, and socializing. As a result, what I argue is that sports clubs serve as a testing ground of an emerging middle-class masculinity, where new conceptions of the self, defined in relation to the body, physical prowess, a distinct look, and one's ethno-religious community came into being. So while these clubs embraced a shared civic middle-class identity, what's interesting is that they also projected an exclusive ethno-religious one. So clubs were established along ethnic and confessional lines and attracted members from a specific ethno-religious community. So indeed, what these clubs did was that they served as spaces where young men actually built ethnic-based solidarity. Associations did not explicitly deny young men from other ethno-religious groups the ability to become members. Nevertheless, membership was predominantly ethnically and religiously homogenous. The main language and symbols used and the eponyms that organizations adopted projected a distinct ethno-religious identity. So a young Turkish and Armenian man became a member of an athletic association by agreeing to abide by the club's internal regulations, like the one we see in front of us, and paying regular membership fees. After becoming a member, he received an identity card which featured his name and the date in which he was registered, like the one we see here. This is for the Fenerbahçe Sports Club. As a disclaimer, I'm not a supporter of the Fenerbahçe Club, although I know there are some people in the room who do support it. It's another joke. So membership enabled young men to perform their athletic dexterity in newly constructed spaces throughout Istanbul. These events attracted large crowds of spectators, facilitated both intra and intercommunal social interactions, and legitimized the appearance of young men wearing club uniforms and performing novel and physically challenging activities. For example, predominantly Turkish and Armenian clubs organized football matches, track and field events, as well as free movement exercises throughout the city, one of the most popular ones being Istanbul's largest outdoor stadium, Union Club. So these activities also enabled young men to cultivate and display the proper masculine values and etiquette needed to become what members of sports clubs referred to as, quote, a good sportsman, end quote. A good sportsman meant embodying the characteristics of a modern civilized man, which included honesty, discipline, respect.